A reading from the Gospel of John, the first chapter, verses 1 through 14. John unfolds the great mystery of the Incarnation. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will of the flesh or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
So Christmas came early for me this year, but not at all in the usual way, with presents and lights and carols and cookies. It happened way back on October 22nd. Right here, after church. It had been a full morning here, two worship services with Sunday school, confirmation, adult ed, and a new member class sandwiched in between. After the second service, we had a special luncheon to thank our usher teams and our tech team for all of the ways they provide hospitality and enrich our worship experience here. Then I had a full afternoon and evening scheduled, with a burial in the cemetery outside at 2, a Christmas pageant planning meeting at 4:30, a Reformation adult study at 6, and a nominating committee meeting at 7:30. Once the luncheon and youth bell choir practice were over, Chip, my husband and co-pastor, left to take the kids home for an afternoon and evening full of soccer and youth groups. No sooner had everyone left when a young couple walked in the back door of the church with their infant son in their arms. At first, I thought they were visiting the church and had just shown up late for the services. Or maybe they wanted to schedule a baptism for their son. I ushered them into the office so I could figure out who they were and what they needed. Their names were Daniel, his wife Janina, and their baby son Fabio. Daniel could speak some limited English, but Janina knew only yes, no, and thank you. At the end of 20 minutes of halting conversation, sometimes resorting to pen and paper, hand gestures, and charades, I figured out that they were Romanian. The husband had immigrated to the United States in search of work and had ended up somewhere in Florida, where there was a Romanian immigrant community. After working several months, he was able to send for his wife and newborn baby. Then a trustworthy friend promised him a job in New York, and Daniel spent all of his money to buy an old Dodge Caravan to drive his family up here. Once they arrived, however, the job evaporated, and they were left with nothing but their car and each other. What Daniel and Janina really wanted was to drive back down to Florida, where at the very least there were other people they knew who spoke their language. But they didn't even have money for gas, let alone food or diapers. Oh, yeah, and they didn't have any identification papers either, which explained why they were afraid to go to the police. Now, I have no idea how they ended up in Yorktown or here at this church. They seemed sincere, and they were clearly hungry and scared. The only one who seemed oblivious to the precariousness of their situation was little Fabio, who gurgled and squirmed on his mother's lap while he drooled and gnawed on his fist. What I do know is that the more time I spent with them, the more convinced I was that Mary and Joseph had shown up on our doorstep, this time with little baby Fabio. For the umpteenth time, I was so grateful to be part of this congregation. With another family showing up at any minute to bury their beloved father, I quickly went up to the kitchen where people were cleaning up from the usher luncheon. Because we always have plenty of food here, the helpers dished up two heaping containers full of chicken and rice and vegetables. Because we run a food pantry here, I found some travel-friendly food items like juice and granola bars and cereal. Because our food pantry gives out diapers once a month, since you can't use food stamps for them, I was able to give this family a week's supply of diapers. And because you all generously give to our Silent Samaritan Fund, I was able to give them some money to buy gas and food and formula for Fabio. As Daniel and Janina ate their lunch, carefully saving half of it to take with them for later, Daniel and I worked out on a piece of paper exactly how to make the money last for the 2 or 3 days it would take to get them to Florida. Then Daniel asked me if there was a mass here that they could attend. And since I didn't think they'd want to join the grieving family at the burial, I offered to pray for them instead. As they got ready to go, they both shook my hand and then hugged me, and Daniel said, "God bless you." It is not too strong to say that I have been haunted by that encounter ever since. Every now and then, I find myself wondering what became of Daniel and Janina and little Fabio. How was their trip? Did they make it to Florida? Have they found a community that speaks their language? Did Daniel find another job? How are they surviving? And I continue to pray for them, that they would find welcome and safety and the means to support themselves wherever they end up. I think the reason why Daniel and Janina have stayed with me so vividly is because their story invited me into some of the dark shadows and hidden corners of our world that we don't usually notice or even want to acknowledge. Poverty and homelessness, the complexity of our immigration system, what it means to be a stranger in a strange land, what it feels like to be lost and afraid, caught up in circumstances beyond your control, not knowing where your next meal will come from or where the next day will find you. Intellectually, we all know these problems exist, but they are so overwhelming, both in scale and difficulty, that it's easy for us to distance ourselves from them, to ignore the issues and the people, or to throw up our hands in despair at any real possibility for hope or change. But Daniel and Janina are real people with real faces and voices, real needs and fears. And they made all these issues and problems very real and very close again. This Advent, we have been on a journey from darkness to light. As the days have grown shorter and the nights longer, we have also been reminded of the darkness present in our own lives and in our world. This is the reality into which Christ was born so many years ago on that silent night in Bethlehem. And this is still the reality in which we wait for Christ to come again, to be born in us anew. And so we have spent this holy season waiting in the dark, searching for light, and finally seeing it. What we celebrate tonight is that Christ was not born in broad daylight, in the midst of bright lights and trumpet fanfares, celebrity worship, and holiday hoopla. Rather, God's Son was born in the middle of the night to lowly peasants in a stable. in one of the in this the same Christ, the light of the world, promises to meet us in all of the dark places in our lives and our world too. The birth of Jesus tells the world that God reigns over the darkness and everything that fills our hearts with worry, fear, and pain, just as surely as God reigns over the light and everything that brings us peace and hope and joy. Tonight, the season of waiting and searching is over, for the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light. The invitation of this holy night is first to see the light that pierces the darkness, and then to live in the radiant glow of that light. In his publisher's column in the Christian Century magazine this month, Lutheran pastor Peter Marty wrote about his time serving a church in Kansas City. Every Advent, this congregation dutifully set up a life-size nativity that weighed a ton and had definitely seen better days. There were recurring problems with the electrical connection to the light over the manger, and one year, a pickup truck veered off the road and took out two of the wise men. Jesus didn't get any frankincense or myrrh that Christmas. But the biggest problem was keeping track of baby Jesus himself. Apparently, he had become a popular target for local pranksters and thieves. Out of the 8 years that Marty served this church, baby Jesus disappeared at least 5 times. Marty wrote, "The thieves never took an interest in the crib or the hay. All they wanted was Jesus. They never even left a ransom note. I could only hope that Jesus ended up in the hands of someone who needed his presence more urgently than our aging gray creche." It got to the point that every morning during Advent, Marty would do a bed check on his way into the church to make sure that baby Jesus was still asleep in the hay. One morning, Marty was surprised that not only was Jesus still there, but someone had left a small gift beside him with a label that read, "Happy Birthday, Jesus," birthday spelled B-R-I-T-H. Marty writes, "After deliberating on whether removing it from the manger constituted a sacrilege, I brought the package in from the cold. An office colleague and I faced the next moral quandary. Should we unwrap this present? Curiosity decided for us. An old shake-and-bake pork seasoning box was beneath the red paper. Inside the box were 33 cents and a piece of notebook paper with these words, 'Dear Jesus, happy birthday. Here's some small change for you to feed someone who is hungry. I give myself to be kind to others, as you were kind to other people on earth. Love, Maria.'" Marty knew immediately who Maria was because she lived on the church property in a house that the church owned and operated for persons living with chronic mental illness. Maria was a paranoid schizophrenic who nevertheless had a tender soul and a big heart. Even in the darkness of her mental illness, with multiple voices competing for her identity, Maria saw the light. And even more, she chose to live in the light of that holy sacrificial love. She knew that there were hungry people in the world, and she knew what Jesus would do when he grew up and encountered those hungry people. He would multiply loaves and fishes so that there would be more than enough for everyone. Maria knew that Jesus could do miracles with even small gifts, so she gave him all that she had, 33 cents. No matter how dark her world, Maria decided to live in the light, to be generous and kind, just as Jesus had been and still is today. Friends, the light is shining. Do you see it? How will you live now that the rays of God's redeeming love have touched your life? In his letter to the Ephesians, the Apostle Paul summed up our Advent journey perfectly when he wrote, "For once you were darkness, but now in the Lord you are light. Live as children of light." This is the good news. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. This is God's wondrous gift to us, so that we may let God's light shine in us and through us, so that all the world may find hope and peace, love and joy. Amen.